And welcome back to episode 166 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
Hey, Carl, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Very good, because I am burning through 3D printer filament at the minute. Absolutely chugging through it.
You had another several tons delivered to your house this morning.
Small shipage, shipment arrived this morning. So since getting the Bamboo A1 Mini, no endorsements here, only in, was it March I got it? I've burnt through a spool of filament already. How long did I have the Ender for? 18 months? 2 years?
Two and a half years. Well, you bought it in lockdown, I'm sure.
I didn't use a whole spool with that.
Did you not? Wow.
No. Because the amount of time, the cock-ups, the alignment on the bed just drove me nuts. And... I can't believe, but this Bamboo, I've gone through a whole spool in a month, a bit. So, wow. So I picked up on your recommendation, that multicoloured golden, is it golden it's purple,
silk,
I think, isn't
silk
it?
Silk something, isn't it?
So, silk, which is nice, PLA.
Like a blue and pinky purpley one I've got.
It's there. Nice stuff, yeah. And I've got a nice vibrant blue as well, so, that's underway. So if you hear a little doot-doot-doot in a bit, that's that print finishing is going at the moment, so...
Deadlines to meet with the kids, haven't you?
Tough requests coming in from those customers. Well, talking of tough requests, we have got a bit of a mixed lineup for you this week. We are going to give you a little update on the UK's Investigatory Powers Bill, which is about to become law again, which is an extension to the powers that are under the Investigatory Powers Act 2016, which are used by the UK intelligence services, police, and other agencies. And this, again, there's some controversy about what this is going to have. We're also going to talk about The Escape from Tarkov, which is a game coming out soon, maybe not so soon at this rate, which has angered some players who perhaps weren't expecting it to cost so much money. But more on that in just a minute. Also, the iPad OS from Apple is going to have to comply with the EU's Digital Markets Act. And again, perhaps no surprise on that, but it is another device and another platform that Apple are going to have to align to the DMA. We'll give you more information on that as well. And also, we're going to talk about Razer. Now, this is a story that we spoke about three and a bit years ago now.
It's in lockdown, wasn't it?
During lockdown. In COVID times, around the Razer mask. And boy...
Well, there's been some progress on that.
We were not wrong with our initial views either. And we're going to talk to you a little bit about some of the film, TV stuff that we've been watching over the last month or so. And the TechRant Rumor Mill is back with an iPad rumor that we may get to see on Tuesday at the Apple event. But more on that after the stories that we've got this week. So let's talk about the UK's Investigatory Powers Bill, which is about to become law. It has become law, since we've talked about it. So it has become law, isn't it? So this is these are the changes that were in place, really all focused on privacy, don't they? And around... Or lack of. So the initial Investigative Powers Act, which was 2016, already allows the government, intelligence, police to hoover up information on UK citizens, allows them to gain access to telecoms activity, which includes messaging, phone calls, other information, and allows you to go through IP data. It's very similar to some of the Homeland Security or the Patriot Act, isn't it, in the US here to do it. But this new amendment, which has come out, has kind of upset and angered a few other people, isn't it, with some of the changes that are in there around personal privacy, really, isn't it?
Yes, it has. I mean, so it's an amendment to that previous one, but it kind of expands what they can do and sniff out and get. So, I mean, they can do stuff like, it's been designed now, what it's saying is to tackling modern threats to do with national security and child abuse. It basically includes getting your internet connection records, which is basically everything you've done online, so DNS records, sites you browse, IPs you've connected to, all that kind of stuff, as long as you know how long you're on there, all that kind of bits and pieces. Full access to CCTV footage as well, they can pull in now. I wasn't entirely clear whether that was, I presume that's private CCTV footage they can go and get off you now as well.
Well, the way it reads, so to my understanding, the way I interpreted it was yes, it was, wasn't it? So it says, because one of the amendments wasn't it, around gather bulk data sets of personal information, which included CCTV footage and or social media images.
But I'm going to presume that's probably if you've got a CCTV, like, I don't know, Nest, Ring, all those ones that are cloud connected and get footage, so they can easily go and subpoena Google or whoever, Amazon, and get that footage. That'd be a lot more difficult if it's privately hosted. I suppose they're going to have to come to your door with that one. A bit easier for you to recognise they're taking your data when they turn up.
Well, yeah, and this is sort of the concern, isn't it, now? But you're right, that under the umbrella of national security actually encompasses a lot of things now, doesn't it? And they're going to use this act to, I think, gain more data, clearly. Very easily, you know. For now, look, don't get me
wrong. Social media is the other one, isn't there, on that list? They can hoover up as well, all your social media stuff.
Yeah, don't get me wrong here. You know, if there's a threat to national security, I want you to do whatever you can to stop that or investigate it and do it. But the scope for, I don't want to say abuse because that's not the right word, but the scope, should we just say, for leveraging these powers in other investigations is probably going to be quite high, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from, you know, from the tech company perspective, or you look at it from privacy campaigners, you know, the wide ranging capability of this power is going to upset most people, really, isn't it? You know,
it is. There was another little snippet in there, which is personally, I think, is more concerning and doesn't just affect the UK. The bill also requires tech companies that operate in the UK to consult the UK government before rolling out any security updates. And apparently the UK government has the power to veto that. So if you're trying to patch a zero day that the government are now using, they can block you from patching that zero day.
So, but is that's not going to be publicised, is it? Let's be honest.
Oh, of course it won't be publicised. No,
that's going to be under a D notice. So you're never going to be able to report on that or say anything. But yeah, you're right. If that's a little tight little back door that, as you say, GCHQ have discovered and are leveraging for, I don't know, absolutely just, you know, made up example, snooping on, you know, some extremist terrorist group and their, you know, on messaging service or whatever, then yeah, I can see you're right. They're not going to want to patch that at all, are they? But, you know.
It's going to become obvious, though, that one, surely, because let's take Apple or Google, for example. They found a zero day. They've consulted the government. The government's gone, no, you can't deploy that one. They're still going to deploy that everywhere else other than the UK. So you're going to see different patch levels or different sizes of patches. And so you're going to go, well, there's X, something's going on here. Obviously not most, the general public won't notice this, but people actually in security are going to understand this.
But this is one of the big arguments around the bill, isn't it? Is that by forcing these companies to disclose or you know, get government approval, this could undermine, you know, the security posture of the UK and or rolling out, as your point, you know, updates or features that could impact the wider populace or organizations, businesses, you know, that are based here. And if you, you know, one of the examples that was raised in the Register article, wasn't it, was around Apple, for example. If you recall, they refused, didn't they, to unlock an iPhone that was from the San Bernardino shooter. Because they said that they couldn't do that because it would be a breach of, you know, privacy, breach of other laws. And it wasn't that they didn't want to help, but their argument was, if we do it once, we're going to have to do it every time. Yeah. And we can't have a free-for-all to say, why are your rights any greater than somebody else's? And as it turned out, the FBI found a way around that, didn't they, if we recall? Yeah. I think it was Cellbrite, wasn't it? I think they went to.
It was, I'm sure. So, yeah, exactly. And from what I remember, it didn't actually reveal any useful information.
No, but the point being is, I have no doubt whatsoever that, you know, the intelligence services here, and let's look particularly at GCHQ rather than MI5 or MI6, are going to have capabilities in-house to break these devices.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just waiting for the news that comes in that, you know, the people's government's iPhones or Android devices were hacked, and it turns out it's because they told Google or Apple not to patch that in the UK. But they'll then promptly not disclose that and blame Apple and Google for it.
Oh, of course they will. Of course they will. And the other big argument around these particularly powers and the upgrades is, again, continually comes back to end-to-end encryption, doesn't it? And again, you know, the whole argument that does the average person need to have end-to-end encryption on their communications? Because, you know, only criminals and governments use end-to-end encryption. And there was a joint statement put out by the European Police Chiefs Association.
Oh, this should be good.
Which basically came out and said, and this was posted on the National Crime Agency website, by the way, and I won't read it line for line, but I'll paraphrase some of the errors. It says, we, the European police chiefs, recognise that law enforcement and technology industry have a shared duty to keep the public safe, especially towards children. Yes, we're leveraging back to the child abuse situation. Again, you know, we on this show absolutely condemn any form of it. You know, want to make that very clear, you know. And of course, anybody
that is... It's an argument used for multiple sins.
But yes, this is the point. And what they're saying is in this, that they say that you know, they have a proud partnership of complementary actions to towards the end. But they're saying that the partnership's at risk between the tech industry and police, because it says, first off, that, you know, that the law enforcement safeguards and oversight is that the data is susceptible to criminals, which is not in getting access to that through lawful access. Well, that's fine. We appreciate that. Yeah. But what they're saying is that tech companies should be proactively identifying legal service. That's fine. They have the ability to alert the authorities, and that, you know, means that perpetrators were arrested and brought to justice. Absolutely. But what they're really worried about is they're saying that they're deeply concerned that end-to-end encryption is being rolled out in a way that will undermine the capabilities for law enforcement to be alerted, and also from you know, that other areas of heinous crimes such as terrorism, trafficking, drug smuggling, etc., that they can't get the evidence to that because they're encrypted. And it says that the companies themselves will not be able to identify and therefore respond to a lawful authority because these data will be encrypted.
Yes, yes. Well, I love the way they say being rolled out in a way. There's only one way to do it. You do it or you don't. It's end-to-end encrypted or it isn't.
Well,
if you put a back door in, it isn't end-to-end encrypted anymore.
Yeah, they've gone back. They then go on to say that we're committed to supporting the development of critical innovations such as encryption as a means of strengthening cybersecurity or privacy of citizens. However, we do not accept there need to be a binary choice between cybersecurity or privacy on the one hand and public safety on the other. Absolution on either side is not helpful. Our view is that technical solutions do exist. They simply require flexibility from the industry as well as governments. We recognise that solutions will be different for each capability and also different between platforms. We therefore call on the technology industry to build in security by design to ensure that they maintain the ability to both identify and report harmful illegal activities. Now, okay, so basically what you're saying is you can have encryption, but as a tech company then you need to be decrypting everything so you can tell us what's going on.
I also love that he used a line about flexibility from the government. From my understanding of this bill, the government listened to no one and ploughed forward anyway, and there was zero flexibility.
It just doesn't work. They're quite happy to have encryption all their stuff, you know, and rightfully so, but I am not allowed to leverage encryption on my communications because there is the potential that I could be doing something terrible.
Well, I would say the police and government haven't got a great track record of being squeaky clean, have they?
Look, I am all for innovation. I'm all for security. We work in the industry, you know, we have bias. But this is becoming 1984, isn't it?
It is. You know? Who watches the watchers?
And that's the problem. Because if you look at what happened in the US post 9/11. Now, if we take 9/11, what happened? Terrible. And the response to that was the powers that rolled out, the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Acts, all that stuff that basically gave the US government the ability to look at everything and everybody, didn't they? Yeah. And off the back of that, we had Edward Snowden saying, by the way, they're not just looking at this, they're looking at everything. And it becomes, at what point do you go beyond the scope of your original request? And that's the thing here with these requests is, you know, they're going to suddenly realize that actually they can leverage these acts or legislation in other criminal cases, in other investigations, and they'll find a way to do it. Because well, it's
of course,
going to be
I mean, when there's no actual oversight because you're the government, that happens very quickly.
I mean, I don't want to say it, but you know, it's probably like living in China.
It's going that way in the UK, isn't it?
It's frustrating because, you know, I'm absolutely behind the government keeping us safe.
Yeah.
You know, it is their duty to ensure that, isn't it? And I also want to ensure that, you know, from a tech perspective, that the industry plays its part. But you just can't, yeah, you can't have it one way or the other. And to say that solutions exist, yeah, SSL decryption, all that kind of stuff does exist. And the minute also we get to quantum computing, it's also the minute any government has a working quantum computing platform, it's over as well, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
because you know that encryption is dead as well.
What I find funny is they're targeting all this at the mainstream services, the WhatsApps, the Facebook Messenger, all that kind of stuff, the end-to-end encryption. But the bad guys aren't going to use that when they know the government can tap into it, are they? They're going to use self-hosted solutions. So
exactly.
They're not getting any more data about the bad guys. They're just getting more data about the good guys.
And I think, you know, what this doesn't take into account in that statement is for every amazing innovation, you know, the bad actors are there with you or one step ahead.
Yeah.
And it's just true to form. You know, whatever innovation comes out, they will be running it. They will be using it and they will be driving it forward. And if you just look at the tech industry, you know, this is a family show, but you know, if you look at the innovation in home recordings, you know, VHS, if you look at things like, you know, they're like DVDs, a certain particular adult entertainment industry leveraged and drove all of those innovations, didn't they? And yep. It's the same thing from a criminal perspective in some of it as well. This stuff gets happened and gets used by everybody. So, you know, whatever, you know, we're doing today, criminals are just as smart and they are just as innovative as the industry is. So, yeah, it's playing. It's like whack-a-mole, isn't it? To be fair,
yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's a weekly tech rant, and this just gets up my nose because this I just feel is getting to a point of where we are living in a complete and utter nanny state where you cannot do anything, and it just is frustrating. And I know other countries, you know, have similar concerns and similar, you know, governments are doing it, but I think we are getting very close to the US and China in how we do that here under the guise of public safety and security.
We get too stressed out about that one.
let's talk about more money. Let's talk about Escape from Tarkov, because I hadn't heard of this till you popped me the link a couple of days ago. So tell me, what the hell is Project Escape from Tarkov,
I've seen it several times before. Extraction shooter, but it's in early access, okay? And this story is kind of crazy, especially about the kind of money people are paying for a game that isn't actually released yet. So imagine you just spent $150, okay, on the Edge of Darkness edition of Escape from Tarkov. So say a game still in early access, $150 is probably going to be worth it because this promises all subsequent DLC for free. It's a top package, okay? You then wake up to find a new PvE co-op mode is going to be released. You're excited. Isn't actually included in your $150 Edge of Darkness edition, but instead only in a brand new $250 Unheard of edition.
Excuse me?
Yeah, but basically, doesn't your edition include all future DLC? Ah, the devil is in the detail. You see, it's not DLC, it's a new feature.
it's one of those. It's a feature.
You can upgrade to the new edition for only $100, so you're not even getting a discount as you were the most loyal fan at $150. Not anymore, no discount. As you can imagine, this hasn't really gone down well with the community. They're slightly annoyed would be an understatement. But to make matters worse, the game developer's initial reaction was one of those, we're sorry you feel this way, rather than, you know, an actual apology from themselves. So they're trying to shift the blame to the community because it's their fault. It's their fault for misunderstanding. They've then kind of doubled down on the whole DLC feature thing. They actually put out a statement saying, first of all, PvE game mode, this is not DLC. DLC, in our understanding, is the major addition to the game, including various functionality and content that are released after the official release of the game.
Yeah,
that's a themed DLC pack. Well, I would argue that, you know, co-op PvE is a major addition to the game. You know, it's a big functionality, but apparently it isn't. So after that one, I think the backlash was brutal and swift in the forums. I think they've eventually relinquished, haven't they, on that one? They've kind of taken giant steps back.
So how much is it going to be then?
Well, it's still $250 if you want the Unheard of edition. They've still got that, and they've still kept the Edge of Darkness edition just in case someone wants it. But they are offering a 70% discount on the upgrade to Unheard of edition, so £30 rather than £100. And they've said that the Edge of Darkness edition will get access to the PvE co-op mode for free after the game leaves early access.
But it's been in early access for quite a long time, isn't
it? Yeah, I don't think it's going to leave for a couple more years yet. But they're still doing that whole "we're sorry you feel this way" stance in their communication with the fans.
I don't get it. I mean, that is a PR failure of the greatest.
Literally shot themselves in the foot and face multiple times.
But you've got to admit, so this is. You've got to admit, this has been there for seven. So I like a quick look. So 7 years, I think it's been out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And most people, apparently, according to some research I did, have bought DLC that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So you're definitely going to feel that you've been robbed here, haven't you? Really.
Especially if you bought that all dancing, 150, yeah. all future so, DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would. Actually, well, I don't think I spent $150 on a game that hadn't been released yet, but a lot of people do.
I was going to say, Star Citizen.
But I haven't bought Star Citizen, so we're okay.
No, so Star Citizen, you can buy Star Citizen now, can't you? I think.
Star Citizen, is it slightly different? Similar thing, but you buy a base game, then you could buy ships, couldn't you? But you didn't need to buy the ships. But the ships were ridiculously expensive. I'm sure I saw some going for $30,000.
I think, yeah, so you can buy the everything package for $48,000. So that is okay. 170 vessels from everybody, all the basically everything, and a rifle. You must have more money in sense. But don't forget, though, Star Citizen did come out, didn't it, a long time ago, where they were saying it was going to cost, you know, several hundred goes, wasn't it?
I think they started by saying this is going to be an expensive game.
Yeah, so there was back in 2018, there was the Legatus pack, which was 117 ships, which was $27,000. You know, now it's down to, I think, $50, isn't it? I think, give or take, am I right?
I've heard it's close-ish as far as Star Citizen is ever going to be to release. I would be tempted to have a punt at like 40 or 50 quid.
Yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that announced around the same time as Elite?
Probably. It was a Kickstarter, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a Kickstarter, and you know, it was there, and it was big money at the time, wasn't it? But it was rumoured also to be costing, I'm sure I read somewhere, in excess of sort of $80 million, like Hollywood budget.
It's up to 600 or 700 million, was that, I thought.
Oh, it's got, okay, so that's what I'm saying. So it was ridiculous kind of money, wasn't it? But again, for a game that never really had a full release.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I get
650 million budget so far as of December last year.
I get that, these games cost money, and you know, we talked last week, didn't we, about Embracia and the money problems they're having.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't. Why alienate your? And especially with that Tarkov, why alienate the people who have already purchased the game? You know.
Yeah, the ones willing to spend $150 are your biggest fans. You then screw them over.
Yeah, that is not the smartest move I've ever seen. No. You know, really. But I don't know. I'm almost. I have to say.
You want to go play, don't you?
I'm just going to say. I am slightly.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Well, that's true. I can't deny it. I'd never heard of it, so I did go down the rabbit hole of having a look at it. I'm like, actually, maybe I don't know, because it kind of looked a bit like Stalker, you know?
Yeah,
let's get a Chernobyl one on it, but I don't know. But yeah,
how much is it going to cost you? Not 150, I hope.
No, not at all. But it won't be cost me anything, because I'm not entirely sure whether I want to play it now either. So. Anyway, moving on then from costing loads of money to costing somebody lots of money is Apple. So Apple have been to sign up. Sorry, Apple have now discovered that iPadOS will now fall under the Digital Markets Act and will require the same changes that are being implemented to iOS for the European market. Which, you know, the things we've talked about before around choice around browsers, the ability to add in third-party app stores, and another such key areas as well. I am not surprised by this one bit. I'm not entirely sure how Apple either thought they were going to get away with this, because iPadOS is just a fork of iOS. It's all the same capabilities. Surely they must have known that this was coming, you know.
Yeah, but I suppose it wasn't out on the initial one, was it? It was, it's been a 8-month investigation by the EU to figure out that, yes, it is in fact a gatekeeper.
So apparently they decided, the EU Commission apparently said that they gave themselves 12 months to investigate iPadOS to decide whether or not it was relevant. Now, given that the DMA, and now given the days, assuming they started that right after the DMAs were first announced, it's only taken them 8 months to decide.
Yeah, exactly.
8 months. I mean, Apple themselves have basically said that they will engage with the EU around the DMA and, you know, provide the best services. But again, this is just more frustration. I can't imagine, though, it's going to give them much of a bit of a headache in terms of engineering, because it's already in iOS.
Yeah, I imagine most of the code's already in there behind feature flags and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, though, I mean, Apple had a Q1 earnings call, didn't they? Was it yesterday, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
And it wasn't great. It wasn't great.
They were still up, though, weren't they?
They were still up. But they had one of their lowest sales, didn't they? I think it was down.
iPad and iPhones were down, I think.
Yeah. But they're still seeing really strong growth in China. And they've allocated $110 billion for share buyback.
Wow. That's a lot of chance. I think shares are up because of that, aren't they?
But the services business grew 11% to $23 billion in sales. I mean, so it's not like you said, it's not like they're struggling, is it? Let's be honest.
No, didn't they make $95 billion all in?
Yeah, quarterly revenue of $119 billion.
Oh, okay. They're not short of a penny or two still.
Like, get me wrong here. Most companies would give everything to have that... To that kind of numbers. But, you know, the market, you know, probably has responded not in a negative way, has it, massively, but the price did drop overnight just a little bit. But it has climbed back up to $184 a share. So they're still doing well. But they're $2.8 trillion. Microsoft are a market cap of $3 trillion. Yep. So there's, you know, not much in it, really, is there? No. Only a couple of $100 billion between friends.
Exactly, yeah. Pocket change.
Pocket change again. But I think to your point, the fact that Apple said they're going to buy back shares has really made the market go very happily.
It did.
But we should see, we'll talk a bit more about in the rumor mill, but I'm guessing the announcements at WWDC around AI, or at least the anticipated announcements on AI, should hopefully put them in a better position going forward.
But, yeah, fingers crossed.
We will see. So let's go back to a story that we talked about 3 years ago during COVID, in the early days of the tech grant, when, you know, masks were very much, you know, fashion item of the day. And Razer, that accessories company, decided that they were going to release an N95 mask with RGB, because let's be honest, you ain't doing it right if you haven't got RGB.
Yeah, it was the Razer Zephyr. Yeah, Zephyr, RGB lights, correct. Bluetooth, N95. There was going to be a Zephyr Pro that had voice amplification, microphones in it, and all sorts of things. But yeah, this is an odd one. So yeah, they did advertise, didn't they? N95 grade filters. But later scrubbed any mention of having N95 filters from their website and everything after YouTuber, is it Naomi Wu?
She
took the mask to pieces and found out that it wasn't N95 certified in the slightest. Well, according to the FTC, it turns out they never even submitted the mask for testing and certification. So, obviously, the FTC have gone after them, and there is now a proposed settlement in place. Razer will have to pay $100,000 as a civil penalty. They are banned from making COVID-related health misrepresentations and other unsubstantiated health claims. And the real kicker? They're going to have to basically refund everyone that's bought one. So more than $1.1 million to provide those full refunds. Ouch.
Damn.
Yeah. Damn. I like Razer. I know they can. They do make some good kit. I know they go crazy on the RGB, but what were they thinking?
I think they fell into the same trap that a lot of people fell in during COVID, was how can we make a quick buck?
Yeah, it kind of backfired, really, didn't it?
It did. And you, especially, I mean, things have moved on a little bit now, obviously, given the pressures have released and we're not in such a, I guess, health scare. But N95 masks were seen as the kind of baseline masks, weren't they, for protecting yourselves? So yeah. Anything that had that on that was going to be seen as, great, that's going to help me, that's going to be good, and I can look cool at the same time. So to do that was definitely a really bad move on their part to not put it in there, to misrepresent, and basically be as much use as a chocolate teapot, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. They just took advantage of the situation, and now they're paying a big price for it.
And I think that is clear, and I don't think that's a... Given that the FTC have, you know, made that claim and said that they made a false claim during a global pandemic, it's terrible. And I look across in my desk, I've got several Razer. I think they make good kit, but yeah, this was not a clever move on their part at all.
No.
And in fact, it's disappointing that they felt that they could get away with it, really.
Yeah, so surprisingly, Razer had no comment on the situation.
No, you do surprise me on that one, you know. talking to Naomi Wu out of interest. So Naomi Wu was cyber. What was she? What's her best?
Cyber whale or sexy cyber whale or something like that, isn't it?
No, real sexy cyborg on Twitter.
And oh, that's the one.
For many years, she gave an insight into the kind of tech activities in Chinese mainland, in Shanghai and places. She used to do loads of videos on YouTube. She used to post on that. She had a couple of run-ins, didn't she, with some US tech magazines who portrayed her in a favorable light. There was the alleged incident with Linus from Tech Tips, wasn't there? But she stopped posting last year on Twitter, and it was a bit unfair. Then she posted last on Twitter properly on the 8th of July last year, where she basically admitted that she had, in her words, had her wings clipped. And I think basically she'd fallen foul after running under the gamut for a long time by the Chinese security services. So she hasn't posted anything on Twitter for a very long time at all. She's had to follow rules. She does the occasional video on life in Shenzhen. Sorry, not Shanghai. But it's all very above board. It's all very, how do I put it? Friendly towards the Chinese government. Does that make sense? So it's a real shame, because she is an amazing woman, highly capable, massively skilled in all kinds of different electronics engineering and automation. And it's a real shame that, you know, we don't get to see the videos that she put out before, and there's things exactly like the Razer teardown, which, you know, she did very objectively.
Yeah.
So very, it's a real shame to see that, but yeah, unfortunately, I guess that's what's when you live behind the great Chinese firewall, these are things you have to follow.
Yeah.
So then, that probably leads us nicely. We've got a couple of things before we get to room out. So let's talk a little bit about some of the TV that we've been watching recently. Just kind of, again, no spoilers here today, but kind of a couple of things. So I want to talk about Fallout, because I know you finished that now and I haven't quite got there. We're kind of halfway through Discovery Season 5, the final season of Discovery. We're also got an announcement today, didn't we, that The Boys, Series 4, Series 5.
I can't remember which series, but it's out soon.
June the 19th, I think it was.
13th, June the 13th.
13th. I've written down the wrong number.
June the 13th. Really very much good. Looking forward to that.
But let's give us a synopsis on Fallout, please. You know, without any kind of major spoilers. You know.
So I might have to let some bits, but they'll be minor. So it's based on the video game of the same name, obviously. I've never actually played the video game, so I'm just
what? Stop.
I know. I immediately discredit me for anything I say from the future on.
We can't. I'm sorry, Carl. We're gonna have to edit this all out.
cut. That's it. The podcast's over. But no, it's one of those ones I just never got around to. I got married. I had kids. You know how it is. Time for games disappears. I have now got copies of it. It is loaded on the Steam Deck. I'm going to America soon. I'm going to start playing it. But yeah, it's based on the Fallout games. It starts with a character called Lucy. She's in one of the nuclear Fallout bunkers.
The vaults.
The vaults, yep. It's a very 60s aesthetic to it. Lifestyle. It's got to have all that kind of old style tech and the CRT TVs and stuff like that. But it kind of starts off quite, oh, this is a happy life. To keep the gene pool, they do weddings between bunkers. So she's going to get married to someone else in the next bunker. She'll go and live there. But during the ceremony, there's kind of some outside raiders attack. Her dad is kidnapped. And that's where kind of the adventure starts. And she leaves the vault out to the outside world to try and find her dad and track him down. That's, the adventure goes over, is it 6 or 7 episodes? Can't quite remember how many, but very, very good. Me and the wife thoroughly enjoyed it all the way. Can't wait for a second season.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things was, sometimes these TV series can make or break the games in terms of the kind of perception of them. I think The Witcher was another one that was a success, wasn't it, in how it kind of portrayed them.
Although they're ruining that now by replacing...
Well, they are now, but initially...
It started off very, very well.
But Fallout, you're right, is a series that's been running for a long time. It was initially kind of an RPG top-down game. Now is first-person kind of RPG shooter. Very cleverly done. Fallout 4, which is probably one of the good ones in the series, has recently just had a free HD upgrade pack released for it. It's a very good game in that sense. And I think you're right. To do it well is going to benefit everybody. They're going to get new sales of the games.
Apparently sales and player numbers have gone massively up after the TV series.
So, look, I think this is really good. I need to catch up and watch it on it. But it's good to hear that you enjoyed it. And like you say, they've kind of made sure the aesthetic of the games is really captured in the series as well. So that's really positive on it. So the other one then was Disco then. So we're halfway through Disco Series 5 now.
Yeah.
And, again, no spoilers, but this is the final series. There are no more released after this. I wonder whether I have a sneaking feeling we may get a feature film for it. I have funny feeling.
Yeah.
But, the clever thing is because they've said it so far in the future, they can do stuff behind it now quite easily, can't they? They can do spin-offs from it, that kind of stuff. But how do you think it's going? Given it's the final series, my personal opinion for you, I guess, final point is I feel every episode so far is a bit of a nostalgia trip. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and even the whole overriding story arc, which I'm not going to go into, is nostalgia as well. It's picked from the past Star Treks. You'll probably recognise it when the clues drop and you start to piece it together it is kind of based on an old story. I'd say I've been thoroughly enjoying it as well, actually. I'm just ashamed there's not going to be any more of it.
Yeah, I do like it. I mean, there is coming soon, isn't there? So we're going to get Star Trek Academy. It's coming soon. The Section 31 film, isn't it? I think it's now a film, isn't it? It's going to be released. We will have Series 3 of Strange New Worlds as well. Coming out, so there are more Star Trek coming, and of course there's Prodigy Series 2, which is playing at the moment as well. There is more of that coming, but I think you're right. What I like, I think Disco is what I class as a core Star Trek series, isn't it? It's central to the canon and everything, so I will be sad to see it go. And I think we've really built some great characters there around Michael Burnham, Saru, Tilly, all those people that are really strong, good characters that are fit the Star Trek mold of what you expect. So, I'm hoping that Strange New Worlds, when that comes back, can carry that forward and obviously bring us up to date with the next... Well, the problem is Strange New Worlds also has to end as well at some point, because otherwise they're going to bump into Star Trek, the original series, aren't they?
Of course they are,
That's going to end at some point. But I don't know. I'd love to see, personally, a series post-Picard with 7 of 9... Or I'd love to see another series set in the timeline of sort of DS9/Voyager. But I think the problem now, though, with if they go back and do anything in those timelines, is there's been so many changes to the canon I think it's going to be very difficult to pull it off.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
But it is good. I think so. We've got another, what, 5 episodes left, isn't it, I think, now?
Is that what I can't actually remember how.
Episode 5 was the last one.
Yep, it was.
So it must be, I think there's 5 left then.
Yeah. Okay, we got.
And like I say, we've got The Boys then. So The Boys is the ultra-violent super anti-superhero program, which is on Amazon Prime, which is a set for that early June release, which I cannot wait for, absolutely. So that'll be one, you know, if you want to sit back, turn off your brain, enjoy ultra-violence with a bit of humour, and Billy the Butcher and Homelander, then we can thoroughly recommend that as well. Please do note that is not for children.
Yeah, I finally got around to watching Gen V. We didn't watch it at the start. I tried to watch it, and Natalie, my wife, wasn't really interested at the time, but we sat down and gave it another go, and it turns out we thoroughly enjoyed it. So it's filled really the gap waiting for Boys.
And did you think that it was, so Gen V is a spin-off, isn't it, which is kind of set parallel to
Yeah, it's set in their university, isn't it? Where they bring up the suits.
Yeah, and I say, but the timeline's parallel to it, so you don't have to worry about jumping back or forth, does it, in that sense? What did you think from a humour perspective?
Oh, it was very, very dark.
Very dark, wasn't it? Very dark. Yeah. But in the same vein as the others, though.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, awesome. Well, at that point then, that probably brings us nicely to... So then, we have Apple event this coming Tuesday, 7th of May, at 10 a.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Is it 6 or 7 p.m. British time? Which we think is definitely going to be an iPad event, don't we?
Oh, yes. It might be a bit of an odd one if the latest report by Mark Gurman has any credibility there. He's saying that new iPad Pros will not have an M3 sock, but instead a brand new unannounced M4 sock in them.
I don't buy this. Why would you release the next CPU set on the iPad and not the Mac?
I don't know. So the only thing I can think of is obviously Apple. If Apple are doing this whole big AI push, maybe the M4's got so much more AI power in it, from the neural engine, that they're going to need it for the new iPad OS to make it work properly with the AI stuff they're going to announce.
I hear you. I just think that it would be absolutely out of character for Apple to release the next CPU iteration on a Mac.
On an iPad.
Not on the Mac, I mean. Sorry.
It's a bit of an odd one. So I'm really not so sure about that one. I say it would be unheard of if it happens.
And why would they skip a generation and not put out an M3 iPad?
Well, just because I'm guessing because of maybe the neural engine for the AI.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. My question still stands. Why? Unless they've run out of production, i.e. they've not got enough M3 chips, therefore... Also, it makes sense for them to move straight into production with TSMC for the M4 and then go for that. But it just seems a bit puzzling that we'd go for it. Now, I will quite happily put my hands up and say I'm wrong come Tuesday. Yeah?
Yeah.
But there is evidence to suggest that in the iPadOS 17.5 code, there's an M4 chip.
Yep.
So as much as I don't kind of see the logic in it, there are signs that this could be true, which is really surprising, really surprising. But it would put the iPad Pro on a pedestal as a flagship. We know it's a flagship device, but really, really put it up there, wouldn't it?
I mean, personally, the iPad doesn't need any more power.
No, it doesn't. Absolutely does not.
In its current state, I don't even think it needs the M1. Just because you really can't take advantage of it because you're nubbled by the OS.
I stand by that, and we've talked about that many times on this show. Absolutely agree with you. And I look at my iPad over the moment, and I love it to bits, but no way is that thing taxed. In fact, it has an easy life.
Yeah.
You know, as we've said before, without going down that huge minefield rabbit hole, give me better big screen support with the iPad to leverage it as a computer, I'll be happy. Yeah.
Give me Windows, proper multi-application support.
Yeah, give me that.
So I can drag it around, have Windows and put them side by side decently, you know.
But yeah, I'm not so sure, I mean, that we need it. But I think you're right. These rumors may have some substance behind them for a change. Now, we could be completely wrong. We've been wrong before. You know, Apple have done a bait and switch before, haven't they? You know, look at 2 years ago. With the Vision Pro launch, remember? We both had the May event and it slipped, didn't it? And we've, you know. So I think, you know, it is possible here. And, you know, we know WWDC is going to be AI focused. iOS 18, iPadOS 18 are both going to be driven by AI advancements. So you're right. Maybe this is it. Maybe they are teeing up for what is coming with iPadOS iOS 18.
Yeah, I just think because they've got time to, well, they've already built it, but they haven't announced new iPhones until September, and I imagine those are going to have a big upgrade to the Neural Engine. So maybe they're just, they can't wait till the next iPad refresh next year some point to bring the full AI to it, so they need to do the chip now.
Possibly. Yeah, absolutely possible. But it just seems massively overkill for a device that is already, to your point, highly capable, powerful device.
Yeah, exactly.
We will see. So, I can't speak. We will see. Come Tuesday, when the Apple event rolls out, we will update everybody with the latest. I cannot speak today. What is wrong with all the latest announcements and updates from Tim Cook and the Apple gang when we have our next show recording, which is end of next week. So, publishing. So, join us next week for all of the latest Apple news. We'll also have any updates as well on all the latest tech stories, information out there, breaches, cyber news, product updates, and also any of the new TVs and films that have caught our eye in the last week or so. As always, you can find us on Twitter, X, whatever you call it this week. We are at Weekly Tech Rant, and all of the show notes at techrant.online. Everything we've talked about this week and every other episode since the dawn of time, where you can find information there. So give us a like, please tell your friends about us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you very much.